This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Kathleen, Jimmy, Kyle, Luke, and dare I say, our rooks, Paul and producer Dave. And today, we're taking it all the way back to the beginning with a special edition pilot episode coverage of a show that's very near and dear to our hearts here at Bingetown TV. And there's really nothing else to say other than, we're back, bitches.
We're back, bitches.
We knew it was coming.
Yeah, we've got all seven people here. All seven. It's a podcast.
Bear with us, people. This might be a clusterfuck, but we're testing it out right now.
A fun clusterfuck.
We're going to do our best because we've only had five as the most so far. And that was kind of sketchy. So we'll see.
Let me just tell you, this pilot holds the fuck up.
Yeah, it does.
It really does,
man. I can't wait to get my thoughts in here. I think I'm the only one that has these thoughts.
And David,
them not being
how
great.
Far did you get in the 100?
I think episode 3. So I've seen two past this one.
So wait, you've only watched 3 episodes?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Our threshold is 3 is supposed to make you keep watching. So I'm a little pissed at you. So 5 of us are full on. And Paul, what's your deal?
I got to the season premiere of season 5.
Okay. 6. Didn't you see the end of book 1?
Yeah. No.
Okay, so you did not see...
Crime Fire was the last thing you saw.
Crime Fire was the last thing you saw.
And that didn't make
and
you want stopped? To keep
watching. And you didn't keep watching.
Yeah. That's a mistake.
Dude, that's like one of the best episodes.
That is when I discovered Magicians, I'm pretty sure, was that timeline when I was at...
Paul, you can have them both.
Yeah, I don't know.
I couldn't catch up, and then I just... That got drowned. By
we're Bingetown TV, Paul. You binge. You
that
catch
arguably
up.
Is my favorite episode of the series.
Yeah. It also doesn't help that we've already covered season 7. So me and Paul were there early on for the first episode. So it's like we got a lot of spoilers. So like that kind of like that probably killed a little. I'm speaking for Paul here. I don't know what his deal is. Obviously,
no. But I'm just a stubborn bitch.
It's definitely going to be interesting to hear the five of us. We've already been talking about it for so many months now, and then to have the two of you who haven't gotten that far at all to see what you think about it. So let's do it.
My lasting thoughts after seeing this pilot episode, and it totally still holds up, Kathleen, like you said, it just made me miss how bad Bellamy was in season 7 even more, because right from the get-go, Bellamy's just a shot caller, ordering people around. He's kind of a dick in this episode, but he's still got that Bellamy charm, you know?
It was fucking amazing to rewatch the pilot today.
Amazing.
I had a blast. Mm-hmm. I was grinning from ear to ear the entire length of the episode, and the music in the pilot episode it was absolutely bananas. It was so good. I'm so glad that
I can't wait to get my 2 cents in here. All of you guys are so high on this episode, and I'm sure, like, obviously there's 7 seasons of it, you guys have a lot more information than me, but it was whatever. Like, it was
get
like
the fuck out of
it,
here.
It draws you in for a first episode, but acting, like, the dialogue, all trash. Like,
definitely we're gonna get to that, because
the second half of the episode carries it, and it's like not even that much of a carry.
You could tell me that there were 5 shows, different separate shows, different creators, different actors, and they all had the same premise of the opening of the 100, where the entire human population is circling the Earth because of radiation, and they need to send humans down to Earth to find out what's good. I would watch all 5 of those shows, because that premise alone is good enough for me to say, hell yeah, this show has a chance.
I am not denying that at all. The premise is great.
Let's get into it. I'll take us in, right?
Dialogue killed it.
Here's what I mean. We open at the close. Everyone knows the series finale ends with Clark, a flash of Clark, drawing on a prison cell, and that's where we open. Clark is on Earth, drawing the ground. Wow, what's this world she lives in? Exposition. Here we go. It's been 97 years since a nuclear apocalypse. No, I wrote this so bad. Killed everyone on Earth, leaving the planet simmering in radiation. Fortunately, there were survivors. Am I drunk? 12 nations had operational space stations at the time of the bombs. Now, there's only the Ark. One station forged from the many. The Earth needs another 100 years until the Earth is habitable again. Whatever it is. What a dope intro, right? It is immediately what happens is you're introduced to Clark. So cute, so young. I will say it was so nice to visit these characters in the first episode. And again, CW, brand new actors, fresh faces. They're not the best. But to watch them through seven seasons and improve. Man,
they are legit actors by the end.
They really,
that's awesome. Why you guys got that leg up on me. That's what this first episode, the acting did not stand out to me. It was great, but
in general, pilots are kind of lower budget anyway because they haven't really been picked up yet. So these actors are even more raw and fresh than they already were for their first big acting job. So, you know, give them a little slack there, Dave.
The pilot. We're talking about the pilot episode, we're not talking about season seven. They're seasoned vets acting their asses off. This is the first episode. Like, it just didn't do it for me.
I love a fresh crop. Give me a fresh crop any day.
If you want to say that, you know, in this scene, like, Eliza Taylor is obviously, you know, not an amateur, but it's kind of, you know, in the beginning of her career. But obviously, my girl Paige Turco comes in, settles it down, a veteran presence. Yeah.
A young Abby.
Do you know that she is the second name listed on Netflix as they advertise it?
Yeah, it's right.
She, that's at ridiculous. The time, she probably is.
Yeah,
well, she was an accomplished actress before that.
Yeah. Abby so sucks hot. From day one.
We're doing a little bit of a game here, by the way. We're all drinking on the pod, as you can probably hear from that intro I had. Every time someone is now dead, take a sip.
Okay, if we're going to do that, let's get this question out of the way. For the people that have not seen the show yet, being Paul and Dave, I want you to guess right now who survived the entire series front to back and was alive in the end.
All right, we're going to go Clark. Octavia.
We're guessing who we think is going to survive.
Who do you think survives the series?
Okay. I'm with Paul.
And they've got a leg up because they've been in all the conversations when we were.
Yeah, we got a dick up on everybody. I don't think Bellamy does it. I don't think he makes it. I got to say, Monty.
He definitely does not.
Murphy definitely does, dude.
Dave, you got to be
on. Based on that first episode, I would have guessed that Murphy would have been one of the first people to die. Just because, the same mindset with Bellamy. It was like they're both just dickheads. Mm-hmm. Like, who wants a fucking dickhead to live out the rest of your life with, you know?
And spoiler alert for you, Dave, that Murphy's character growth is arguably the best thing the entire show does. Yep.
Murphy's a cockroach, baby. He's going to live no matter what.
He sure is.
So, what did we say? Clark, Murphy.
You said Octavia.
Octavia. We'll go Monty?
Everyone drink.
God damn it.
So that's enough.
Honestly, realistically, Monty and Jasper on screen, I'm like,
honestly, a very happy ending for Monty, though. Monty, he's not a somber best. Death.
No, yes. Monty's death is my end.
I agree, bro. I'm there with you, man. See, it could have ended when book one ended.
I agree.
You guys,
what about Jasper?
Well, okay, I know that. Thank God he should have died a season earlier.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that was brutal. That just ruined them.
I kind of liked that storyline in the end because there would be people who just are sick of fighting to survive and all the savage shit they're doing. It's like, yo.
I fully agree with Kathleen, actually. God. My rewatch,
see a ruined character, but it's valid.
Yeah, I agree.
I think what you were about to say is what my thoughts were when I was doing my rewatch as season seven was happening. Was I actually liked Jasper's storyline better the second time around than the originally, but he's still bottom tier in terms of the main characters.
Yeah, I agree with that. What about Finn?
I literally almost said Finn too.
Well, let's ask Dave. He's watched three episodes.
Yeah, because I'm like the freshest mind here, but I would have thought Finn would have made it.
Right?
Personally,
you think Finn's hot?
Yeah, I think so. I give him credit. I'll slap a one on that.
You can watch episode one and be like, Wells is a main character. He's probably making 100%. It the whole way. Wells, like, there is Dave, so Wells no context.
I thought Wells was the main character of the show right away, like him and Clark. And then we have a bunch of like assholes on the side. But like, I really thought it was Wells and Clark.
Are you aware he dies in episode?
I was the producer for the first few episodes of season seven. I'd never heard Wells's name. So it's just fair enough for me to assume that he died.
And let me jump in here and say, to your point, Dave, he was supposed to be one of the top three main characters in the original books written by, I think, Cassie Morgan.
Yeah,
that sounds.
She has Clark, Wells, and who's the third love?
Bellamy.
And Bellamy be the main love triangle of the entire show from front to back. And when the showrunners decided to kill Wells, who was supposed to be there till the end, that's a huge reason that I put it in the same tier as a Game of Thrones shock value, where anyone's not safe.
100%.
Those first three episodes, I was definitely getting that love triangle vibe. I could see that. But yeah, I just totally thought Wells was going to make it. And
he serves his purpose.
He was my favorite character in the first episode by far.
I think that it's so good because you think Wells needs to make it and he doesn't. That's why it's so good.
And that's the kind of shit that I like, you know, that's the Game of Thrones kind of shit that I want in a show is kill off those important characters.
And that's what The 100 did so well through the first like five seasons.
My thoughts exactly when I was watching the pilot, I was like, wow, I can't believe that Wells only lasted a few episodes. He gets like hardly any talk in the later seasons.
They stop talking about Finn. They stop talking about everybody.
Finn is mentioned later in the series.
Barely. Oh, yeah. When Raven forgets Finn. Like,
I just feel like
that.
Wells should have been such a strong character to talk about later.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about acting. I think him, in terms of the 100 who go down, he's probably the best actor in the first couple episodes. His actor, I think, has the best performance.
Right.
That must have been very hard to shoot because all the people on the ground are those very new raw actors. Everybody that was still in the arc were the like veteran actor presence, like Kane, Abby, Jaha. They're all still on the arc. So like these kids are down.
Boy Jackson.
I got that vibe too. I could tell too that the people on the arc were like, maybe it was also because they're older in general, so like they have that experience. But yeah, I got that vibe too.
So we have Clark in her prison cell just laying the scene, lots of exposition, and then we see her say, "The ground, that's the dream, but this is reality." And as guards are rushing into her cell, like trying to tell her to take her watch off, I think it was, and slap a wristband on her. She's like, this is reality, and reality sucks. So she's aboard this ark in a prison cell, and the guards are coming in, and she doesn't know what the hell's going on. We see her say something like, wait, it's not time yet, I'm not 18. And then we have Abby come into the scene, and she's like, everything's okay, you're going to the ground.
What do you guys think about Abby with this whole thing?
Fuck Abby.
Yep.
Kyle is in love with her. Yeah.
But it's like,
I also would like to fuck Abby, Luke. Okay. That's a great point.
We all would. All seven of us would fuck Abby. Yes. It's like, fuck you, Abby.
Yeah.
You're so calm, cool, collected. I mean,
it's your daughter.
Same bitch that sent her fucking husband to get floated. So, I mean,
that was just like one of the big things that was popping in my head. Like, as this whole scene's going down, I'm just like, they're shooting her with a dart. And, you know, Abby's like, I know that Abby like thinks that it's either death or the ground.
Yeah.
But it's still like, you're just so, again, Kathleen said, right, calm, cool, collected about Clark just getting ready to probably die.
The ground.
Let me give you a hot take right now, which is directly related to all these adults that are on the arc right now. We're not counting any of the 100 that get sent to the ground. I hate all of the characters on the arc as a whole, except for four of them. We have Sinclair, Raven, Dr. Jackson, and Wick. Everyone else on the arc, fuck Kane.
Whoa.
Fuck them all. They are the worst character as a whole, meaning they've added more cons to the show than pros.
Whoa.
Okay, tell me I'm wrong. Who do you like on there? Because I'm sure there's advocates for Kane and Abby, but is that it?
No, Abby sucks.
New guy says Kane fucks. Fuck Kane. That guy sucks.
Right. You only
I'm
know
so happy
negative
you say
Kane.
That. Because
I only know negative things about
I'm
Kane.
Happy you say that because during the May We Meet Again episode, we said he's such a good antagonist.
Love it's Kane. Funny though, because I didn't have a problem with Abby. Like, she was just doing her motherly diligence.
See, her ending
yeah,
character,
we didn't get to see it. We're on pilot episode one. She was just being a mother.
But my take is about the series is just there's a lot of characters on the arc that suck.
Yeah, I think Dave's right about Abby. He has the whole picture. He knows she's hot.
I'm
she's
just
good.
The fresh mind here.
Luke, hit me with that list again.
The list is obviously Raven's the shit.
Nah, the people that you don't like.
Yeah. Everyone that's not these.
Everyone that's not those people. Right. I would argue for Kane only because when he becomes a good character, he's a great character. Definitely. I would argue that. Abby sucks. And I was going through the Reddit and someone literally had a whole post dedicated to saying, I just rewatched the show and it totally stands out. But Abby totally sucked on a rewatch. Yeah. She got so much worse when he watched the show again. From the very start.
Kane has
so
a
annoying.
Sweet spot right in the middle after Pike gets introduced. He's great because he is actually the moral leadership there. And then he becomes terrible again once Blood Rain and them emerge from the bunker.
What?
Yeah, he's the reason that a lot of them die because he goes and tells Dio's of the plan, which ends up getting a lot of the people we care about killed.
Yeah, but Kane, I think soon as he's off the arc and realizes his place, once he knows that the juvenile delinquents that have been on the ground are running shit, he finds his place really quick. I think he stays good. And when he dies, that's fucking upsetting to me. And he had only the best intentions. It wasn't Octavia burning down the fucking oxygen, whatever it was. Like, he was never doing anything that was totally harmful on purpose.
But then also his very last scene, when it's not even the Kane actor that we know, he caused Abby gave up everything. He gave up. She gave up the method to create Nightblood to bring him back. And he just fucking kills himself right away.
It's true. But also, Abby should have never done that in the first place. And she should just listen to Raven.
Abby and Kane both suck.
Luke, I would say that there is no way you can blame Kane for that. If I just got put in someone else's body, I'd be like, whoa, this is unnatural. This is not what I signed up for.
Dude. Also, it feels like a violation of my free will and my rights. Like, you
absolutely it is.
I mean, she should know, like, Kane's whole character, he would have never said he wanted to be part of that.
And especially back to the beginning pilot, like, Kane is the antagonist. He is the villain right now.
He's a good antagonist,
he's so good,
too.
Though. He's so
And I want to clarify, though. When I say I hate him, I don't, I obviously hate him because he's just a dick. You love him. But he's a good villain that was introduced in the first episode.
Do you guys remember watching Endgame, not even Endgame, just Infinity War for the first time and thinking, damn, dude. Thanos makes a really good point.
I still think that. So.
Yeah, right? I'm sitting here and I'm looking at Kane, and I mean we haven't even got to it yet, but I mean, he is the character who has to make the hard decisions for the majority, and I get that's the whole
I mean, Paul, you never got
the
there.
Entire series.
Paul, you never that's got the whole- there, but we see the same thing about the disciples. I mean, honestly.
Okay. All right, let's move forward.
Yeah, move
because
forward.
I totally agree, but we're
you
we're
and
not B-Toms. Even there yet.
You yeah, and B-Toms yeah. are going to keep us on track.
Yeah. So okay, so we find out that basically every crime is punishable by death unless you're under 18, and that's all the delinquents. Clark is already fighting her way out of situations. As soon as they come into her prison cell, she is like throwing elbows, trying to escape until she realizes literally everyone is gone. So they call up the sky box, and then we find out. You're being sent to the ground, whatever it is. And my note is, enter Abby. Kyle, there's your girl.
Hey, we out here.
Talk about Skybox, dude.
It's an intense start.
Box, dude.
It's an intense start, and there's no opening sequence. Classic pilot, no opening sequence.
I liked that, yep.
And I really didn't. I was, like, a little confused. So much, like, is going on right here. Abby's putting Clark to sleep,
no context,
basically.
Right?
Yeah, there's just
it's
no
very
context.
Chaotic first
I think it's
5 minutes.
So
I really like it.
It is good.
Said the and best it's, smile it's, all the way around my face.
And just, it ties back to what we're saying. Like, it goes into the plot of the series, you know, of, you know, these 100 people going to Earth and surviving. So, like, this really draws you into that.
It also just really drives home the fact that what's happening is such a surprise, and like, they're not ready for it. It's like such a, like, it's a secretive plan. So that's why everyone's like, it's the whole skybox is up in an uproar. Like, no one knows what the fuck's going on. So it really does drive home that part of it, like how afraid they are.
It's definitely a chaotic scene. And so Abby just kind of like, they hug and she's like, you're not dying. You're being sent to the ground. And then she says, I forgot how much they drove the narrative about her dad so much in this episode. He is such a referenced character, but she says your first instinct is going to be to protect everyone else like your father would do, but you know, take care of yourself. And then she gets tranquilized and then she wakes up on the dropship next to Wells.
It's so good. I had the chills this entire episode. It's so well done. And then you find out one of the big, interesting, dramatic parts. These people don't know each other. Monty and Jasper know each other. Octavia and Bellamy know each other, which is a great reveal. Nobody has siblings. I had not thought about that the entire
season. I fucking love that. That was funny.
No one has a brother.
Exactly. She's like, I haven't seen my brother. And they're like, no one has a brother. What are you talking about?
I could have fucking been there.
Great line.
But some of the funnest drama is that there's tension between them. You don't know why. Wells got himself arrested. She's like, what the fuck are you doing here? He's obviously not a prisoner. He got himself arrested for her. Can't believe Jaha let that happen, first of all. I guess you could say the same for Abby and Clark. But I mean, wow, the drama there. It's like, you got my father arrested. Like, it was like, you didn't get him just arrested. You got him floating.
And that's another, I'm seeing Dave grab the mic. That's another kind of the corny line, I would say. I think that her acting.
Which one?
Corny.
Yeah.
It was corny.
when he's like, well, it's her response. When her response to him, when he's saying, like, I'm here for you, whatever it is, I can't remember, but it's very,
I don't remember.
Clark has a lot of corny lines this episode.
All I'll say is, like, okay, the episode's really good. It's just probably the dialogue was just the biggest issue for me. Yeah.
I'm
so
down
bad.
With that because no one here is going to defend the corniness.
Yeah. So I think I was like, when I watched, like, I watched this episode like months ago, probably when we were starting the podcast up. Even the first three episodes, it was just the dialogue just could, it was so bad.
Just take into account The Man Who's Speaking's mother watched the entire seven series in like a month.
Yeah, it wasn't even a month, probably.
And she loved it.
And she even, because Netflix hadn't had season seven as it was coming out, she literally spent money to get the Blu-ray editions on her computer. Like,
we
she
love, has you,
them. Love that.
Yeah. Listen, let me just say this. We all started. I started in season three. Luke started short after. I don't know about anybody else. No one started right in the beginning. So this was a binge in the beginning for all of us. And I watched it first, and my exact recommendation was, you got to get through four episodes. I said, I was so sold. You got to understand, you're signing up for a CW show.
Yeah.
A young cast CW show. And it's the story. And again, I'll say it, the dialogue gets better. The acting gets incredible. Like, you got to stick with it.
If you can make it to season two and you drop off, then sure, this show is not going to be for you. But I'm sure a lot of sci-fi fantasy shows are not for you if you're falling off at that point, because the plot structure is phenomenal and you care about the characters at that point, regardless of how corny their dialogue is.
I trust the Bingetown homies no matter what when they tell me anything. But Kathleen specifically and Luke were the two that watched it first, if I'm remembering correctly. And Kathleen said, you're going to watch episode one. You might think it's a little corny. Please just get through three. And I will tell you right now, I watched one through like seven in the first night, because I watched the first one and I said, yeah, it's a little corny, man. And then I just kept going because she told me to. Like I said, I trust her.
Because you told me to.
And by three, boom. And it and really, you lose the corniness as the season goes on. And I forgot how, during my rewatch, Luke will agree, watching season one again, people put that season one as like a lower tier. I loved season one after rewatching it.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
It's not the full season that's like bad that we're saying you just got to get through it. About halfway through the season, it becomes prime the 100. Mm-hmm. It's about halfway through season one, and then into season two, it's just money. But moving on, we have Clark is pissed that Will's just even existing on this dropship. Like, get the hell out of my game. And Will says, oh, I got myself arrested for you. She's like, get out of here, dude. Wells' father, Thelonious Jaha, comes on the intercom TV. It's a pre-programmed speech, like, for all of these 100 delinquents, just saying, when you get to the ground, you got to find Mount Weather. There's supplies there, but nobody's listening because they're all kids. So we do get some hecklers saying, oh, Wells, your dad's a dick. Also, I thought that was so funny.
Absolutely savage message. It's like, quite frankly, the crimes you committed makes you expendable. So we're just going to test you out. It's like, fuck, they already hate him. He is not making himself. Honestly, watching Bellamy and the rest of the crew, obviously Bellamy has his own intentions. I don't blame them. Like,
not at all.
And it happens exactly what they say. The adults drop down and they're like, fuck you guys. Like, Bellamy and Finn arresting them was like a shot to my soul.
As an audience member, that is one of the most frustrating parts of the entire series, is when, you know, you see these kids go through all this shit, even to the point in season two when Clark escapes Mount Weather, and knowing all of this, and she's back at Arcadia, the adults that were on the arc that did nothing this whole season were trying to run shit. And like, as an audience member, you're sitting there like, God damn, Bellamy and Finn and Murphy, even, they all know what they're fucking talking about.
The worst part of season one is when Abby is the chancellor in Arcadia and she just won't relinquish power back to Jaha or Kane, and she's literally the worst person on the show. So I just cannot stand her in charge.
Oh, you mean like in two when they're on the ground?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Man, that's when they get down there. He's got some good takes.
That's also why Kane's a little bit of the homie, like you were saying earlier, Kathleen, that like Kane is one of the first adults to really kind of just get the vibe a little bit.
But doesn't that not happen until Pike comes?
Yeah.
And
oh,
he
yeah,
decides
yeah,
to take the counterpart?
That takes longer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it takes longer in the series, but he's one of the first adults that kind of clicks.
And that's his highlight, is once Pike arrives until, in my opinion, the bunker.
Yeah.
So after this first shot on the dropship, we go back to the Ark, and we have Kyle. What's her name? Cecilia? Cece?
Callie. It's actually Callie.
Callie.
Shout out to the prequel.
Yeah, shout out to the prequel. Callie.
It's Callie, quote-unquote, Cece. So her nickname's Cece.
Yeah.
No, I mean, is she banging Kane?
No.
They're just friends.
Yeah. I think they're banging.
They're not banging.
I thought, no, I mean, she goes into his... Yeah, she goes into his room later, like they're like together.
I cannot confirm that they are not banging. Yeah. So the assumption is they're totally banging. Anyway, going forward, so we have this chick Cece saying, there's a bunch of people from the Ark just questioning, you know, we saw a dropship go off, what's going on? And, she says, the official council statement is we can't confirm anything right now, so just shut up, people. And then we go back to the dropship, and this is where we meet our boy Finn, taking a space walk in zero gravity. I actually hated Finn in this scene. He seems like a total douche.
He is total douche.
You're just jealous.
I mean, everything about Finn is very, if there's anything corny about this episode, it's Finn.
Yep.
So.
Yep, that's what? Newbie says.
Finn when he jumps in.
Yeah, I would agree with
Newbie
that.
Agrees.
My agrees. Note for that is he's Spider-Man's in too.
No, everyone looks up like, oh my God, he's so cool. Like,
no,
and
Octavia's
is like, save me next, spacewalker.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get there. Yeah, so he goes, check it out. Your dad floated me after all.
Another corny. That's bad. But can you imagine, though, like, when they're saying, like, we saw a dropship, a lot of them are saying, are our children on the dropship?
They were going to be floated.
I'm just saying it's, like, crazy. Yeah. Like, they don't know anything, and they're just saying, listen, we don't have anything to say about it.
I just want
to
jump in really quick, because Kane, drink. Sinclair, drink.
Yeah.
And then enter. Monty and Jasper, double drink.
Yo, sexy ass Kane. Look at that jacket and look at that slick back.
Nice young Kane,
dude. He looks great.
I knew you were going to say something about his hair.
He's better in Lost.
Finn is doing this. He's floating. He's causing trouble. Clark is immediately being like, get back in your seat. So is Wells. This causes two other boys to get out of their seat. Just bad behavior. It's learned, you know? And so they end up dying.
Which,
parachutes drop, hits the ground, and they're like, whoa, no buzz in the ears, which I thought was so cool because I've never noticed that. Like, their whole lives,
no machine humming.
They've been on a machine, living on a machine. There's so many things in this pilot that I was like, holy fuck, they've never had brothers or sisters. They've never not heard this buzz
they've
in their
ears. They've never swam. They've never seen not rain. Like,
yeah.
Jesus.
Like,
but
so many things.
Can I just say, you cannot convince me that the physics behind Finn not dying when not strapped in, get the fuck out of here.
That was literally, I was my complaint. I'm glad the other two die, but what? Of course, the main asshole of the three has to live.
I'm actually fine with them living, but I'm actually not fine with his character in that first episode, because he goes from making the joke about I'm floating and whatever Kathleen said. Then he makes the joke to Clark about none of us died in a fiery explosion. And she goes, yeah, but two of your guys died. Then all of a sudden he's like, we got to tell the Ark that everyone's dying. And all
what
of a sudden,
do you mean by that?
In like a little bit, Clark tells him that everyone's going to die.
Yeah, because he's like, Clark's hot. I'm on her team now.
Yeah,
I guess.
Clark,
but I mean,
Clark
he changes
his shirt off
so quickly.
He saw cleavage
like,
and was like,
if they're
going to
make him the guy.
I disagree. I just think that they throw these people on a dropship. And Finn is a wild man. I don't think this is a morality thing. He didn't want the other two to follow him, but that's just what happened. Like, he was just like having fun, and then two people died. He wasn't doing anything to like be.
But
he's
not
Bellamy.
Inertia says Finn should have.
But
died
why
well,
make the but joke to Clark about no one dying?
Because he's a jokester. He does that the whole time. He's just trying to lighten the mood always. That's his role.
Finn sucks.
No, Kyle, back me up.
Finn does actually suck. And if you think he sucks now, then you're definitely going to think he sucks later.
Season two,
but
yes.
I do want to just make a comment of Wells when he's like, you know, Clark, I don't want to die like with you hating me. And she looks at him and goes, I do hate you. That part is awesome.
Awesome.
I said, this relationship is so chaotic for the first 5 minutes of a television series. Like, I paused and checked where we were, and it's like 5 minutes in. Yeah. And their relationship is insane, and we know nothing about it.
It's when they get turbulence, Wells is just like, I don't want to die without getting this off my chest. I'm sorry for having your dad arrested. And she says, they didn't arrest him. They executed him. I do hate you, dude. You suck.
She has no qualms about dying hating him and letting him know about it.
Yeah.
She could have flipped the whole thing. If he really wanted her not to hate her and said right there, your mom got your dad killed, not me. Yeah. Boom.
Yep.
Then they land, they're like, he's like, sorry.
The Go one ahead. Thing I had to say about the scene, not a helmet in sight. Not one bit of head protection.
Right.
Concussions out the ass.
And
everyone.
I mean,
everywhere.
Clark was passed out from the dart and wakes up in the spaceship or whatever you want to say.
I mean, there's a lot of things. The last words that Abby speaks before she almost gets floated are, you can use the wristbands for reverse engineering them to communicate with the... It's like, why didn't you say that before? Why didn't you automatically...
That was a secret she was holding on to.
Yeah. Right. Also, the smart part about that scene, which we don't have to say now when we get there, is that she says to Jackson, nod if you understand.
Yeah.
He obviously heard you. Blink Everyone twice. In the Blink fucking twice. Hallway heard you.
Yeah. Okay. Now we're landed. The dropship has hit Earth. They're all unbuckling. Then enter hot boy, slick back, skinny ass Bellamy, the hottest boy I ever did see. How do you not have chills when you see just
loved
the,
it?
Oh,
also,
geez.
I love
so young,
like,
so young.
One of his first acts is just putting Clark right in her place. She's like, yeah. No, what if the air's toxic? And he's like, if the air's toxic, we're literally all dead no matter what. Like,
yeah,
what kind of fucking excuses?
Just curiously, when did this episode air? What
2014.
Okay,
is when the first season came out.
Damn, they actually 7 seasons in 6 years. I feel like that's pretty impressive, to be honest.
And I do want to say off of that point, I'm really happy after rewatching this pilot for probably the, you know, 8th time. I'm very happy to know that this episode came out after we kind of got over the hump as a humanity for television shows where you can tell a show is old, because when you're watching this show could have been made last year. You wouldn't yep. even know
yeah.
the difference.
Totally. Yeah, I was,
so the production value good. Is there, and I fucking love that.
Just production value and just the idea of it being in the future just takes all of the like outdated references
exactly
out.
15 years from now yeah. you could watch it. It's not going to feel like, oh, look at this old show. Like if you were right. to watch the pilot of How I Met Your Mother, you're like, yo, this is made before cell phones, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this is where we've got Octavia kind of coming from the crowd, and you scan
bounce,
the crowd,
chickle, wow, wow.
But not with Bellamy.
I was
getting siblings.
First time seeing it, definitely got that bounce.
Usually doesn't
chickle,
stop
wow,
you though,
wow.
Kathleen. The siblings thing.
Row. How did, yeah, right? We also cover Carnival Row.
We boy do we, where all the siblings bang in that show. In case you're wondering,
hottest chick on earth. Hottest chick on earth.
True.
You said you think
she's
Octavia.
Not on earth.
Yeah, that's Raven's so up in the arc.
You guys, you keep me grounded, literally, no pun intended. Oh. Anyway, so Octavia shows up. This is where we get the, like, that's my brother. And she's like, nobody has a brother.
I
that's
fucking
such
love
a hot
that.
Line.
I could have
really
done that.
Is.
I could have been in the back of the dropship going, no one has a brother.
And then, who wants to take us into maybe the most iconic scene of all the Hunter's
history? The most iconic scene.
Luke, take us in.
My God. So we have Bellamy out here having a one-on-one with Octavia, and everyone's sitting around just listening to them talk. You know, they're watching this reconvene.
Sure.
They haven't seen each other for a year. And Bellamy is, you know, he's being the leader, and he's offering Octavia the chance to be the first human to set foot on Earth in over 97 years. When he pulls the fucking lever, which is actually the first lever pulled in the show, which there is kind of cool. It's Bellamy, not Clark. So when he pulls that lever to open up the dropship door, God damn, Octavia takes these steps. She hits the earth, turns around, and says, we're back, bitches! I'm waking up. So
that
good.
Was lit, because that's the song. Yeah,
I have song legitimately right watched that scene 6 times today, showing almost everyone here.
I think yes. it's cool, because I love that we all love this moment, but the 100, as a fandom, the 100 writers obviously know that this is a big moment. The radioactive, they use it moving forward on the flashback episode where they show them getting loaded onto, which is honestly crazy because I guess Clark was the only one that got like tranquilized beforehand.
Yeah.
They do that slow-mo radioactive into the dropship. It's so good. I'm glad that everyone knows that this is an iconic moment.
The conversation that Octavia and Bellamy have is, I just love the quote that Bellamy tells her when she's saying, basically everyone knows her as being the girl from the floor. They're all making fun of her, like, that's Octavia Blake. Like, oh my God. And he says to calm her down is like, give them something else to talk
yep.
about. How about being the first person
there
on the
go.
Ground
so
in
97 good.
Years? And that quote is just so good. I love that.
Probably the only good quote I vividly took away from this episode.
Oh, God,
what an ass,
dude. What were you going to say?
I just looked it up. Marie Avdropoulos was actually 28. When the pilot
what?
Was
she's
filmed.
Old. Yeah, she's old.
Yeah.
Whoa, don't say she's old, Kathleen. That's
she's
not
35
nice.
In the finale?
She's 34 right now, yeah.
Basically with like the time jump and like the different
yeah,
planets.
She's like 80. Like,
she's which 34?
Is, she's 19
yeah.
in the Love pilot, you, dude. I swear yeah. to God.
Baby right girl away. Looks no, young. I'm so- this scene would be on my Netflix 2020 Wrapped. It would be like your most watched scene on Netflix, the We're Back Bitches.
It's just so perfect. The radioactive, obviously the word radioactive is just yeah. so relevant. And how many times, Kathleen? We get it at least 3 or 4 throughout the series.
Slow song.
Is it just 2?
Actually, I thought it was 2. Slow.
It's just this one and the next one, but we, I feel like we just reference it
and
so
then,
much.
And then Benchtown like used it very well.
And then also they do reference copyright. The quote of, do we have anything better than we're back, bitches? Like they talk about this scene.
Yeah.
It comes up a couple
together,
times.
Together.
I also will say that they have like the dropship, like door opens, all the wind rushes in her hair. They like flip the camera around to the front of her and the sunlight hits her and she's walking down the ramp and it's like, wow, this girl's so hot.
Did a really good job of everything being dark, metallic-y visually. And then when that latch opens, they're just like,
yeah,
like a breath of fresh air. It's just good.
Literally
directing.
Like the song.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And then they all flood out. But the one note I have from the two notes I have is one of them is Clark's so hot too. Yeah. Clark looks great in this scene.
Really I felt that deep breath that Octavia took.
Me
man.
Too. Yeah.
And also, what would you do?
Roll like around in as much dirt as I can, honestly.
It's so funny that they just like fires just
like
start.
Dirt?
Like, did they start those fires or was that like from the dropship landing?
Probably the dropship.
Some
ship
of the
landing.
Shit's just on fire. And I was like, was that like their celebration? They just started lighting shit on fire.
This is honestly a really good intro. What would you do? Our girl Clark, just like the finale when she lands on Earth for being the only human ever with fucking our puppy pups. What's the pup's name?
Picasso. Yeah.
I looked right at you.
Yeah.
She starts figuring out exactly what they need to do immediately. It's classic Clark. Again, we open at the close, baby. We are just full circle moments here. So she's automatically going around with the map. She realizes that, oh, shit. You see this? We are nowhere near where we were supposed to land. They dropped us on the wrong mountain.
They dropped us on the wrong damn mountain.
Also, that fire would have just burnt that entire area. Like, they landed, and there's a shitload of fire. Like,
well, it's like 150 years.
You're nitpicking.
You wouldn't know.
Not true.
I literally didn't notice any fire in this scene. And Kyle and Dave are just like, where the fires come from? Yeah. You guys are focused on the fires.
That was their celebration. Like, we're on Earth. Let's light some shit on fire. And I was like, don't do that.
I'm still a Clark girl. Through all these seasons, Clark over Octavia any day.
The ship is going fast enough to start a fire when it lands, and you aren't wearing headgear. Go fuck yourself.
Consistently, though. Throughout the whole seven seasons, Lindsay Morgan or bust, dude.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Lindsay Morgan's bust? Is that what we're talking about?
That was
Lindsay
that
Morgan was in How I Met Your Mother.
What?
She was. Yes, that's a fact.
Did we just that boy?
No, nah, I sent it to the Iceland group before. You know that.
Wait.
You think you're better than me?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. All right, Jessica Harmon is Julia's sister in The Magicians.
Dude, even Sinclair being the centaur. Screwed me up.
Okay.
Dude, Sachin being one of the students of Break Bills, I was just like, that's our boy.
But we actually talked to him about it. I'm not even lying. I totally missed Jessica Harmon and Sinclair.
Oh, okay.
Both of them. I totally forgot.
It's just like Canada.
We also cover Cursed, everyone, if you're...
Okay, bringing us all the way back, this is our first, like, actual flirtation scene between Finn and Clark. Finn's like, hey, princess, what you doing? She's looking over the map, and she's like, listen, doofus, we have an entire radiation-soaked forest between us and Mount Weather. We got to get these supplies. Kathleen, like you were saying, this is classic Clark, just everyone's celebrating. She can't celebrate. She can't take that time because she knows someone's got to be in charge of all the kids. You know, she's just taking that position of the adult in the room and trying to get everybody like, we got to go to Mount Weather. Like, we can't celebrate yet. We got to find food, supplies, this, that, and the other thing. Classic Clark.
What is this pathetic excuse of a compass that she's using on this map? It's like a piece of scrap metal. And she's like, I'm going to put this because this proportion.
I was actually proud of her for that.
We have like Dave and Paul
Earth
over
skills,
here
baby.
As
skills.
Like the jokey people who are like just here to trash it. There's
I'm here
no...
to trash the shit out. No, I'm just
why
kidding.
Do
I'm
we
here to
invite them.
Fuck Dave.
I'm genuinely wondering
Dave.
Why we invite them. Specifically Dave, Paul at least.
Yeah, Paul's no. At least. I'm the only one trash.
It's metal, dude.
So Paul's comment is about the compass. The only thing I wrote down about this scene was that Finn's hair is so nice that it upsets me so much because my hair is not that nice.
Very nice hair.
Spacewalker.
Okay, so now we are back on the Ark and we get our intro. Mr. Sachin Sahil. Oh, Dr. Jackson. That's our boy. Go listen to our interview with Sachin Sahil. Okay, anyway. Basically, they're tracking the fatalities and vital signs of everyone on Earth by the wristbands. And this is I would say the wristbands is the plot of the first episode, the first few episodes at least. It's the battle between, do we want these people to know we're alive or not? Honestly, part of me doesn't mind that they're all ripping off. Of course, we're on Clark and Wells' side where we're like,
and they also don't know about the lack of
exactly oxygen. So they have no idea. That's why Wells and Clark are just super woke and they can't really tell anybody about it.
I was torn between whose side I was on with like the wrist. Like I really, because both sides are making really good arguments. Yeah. Like I see why they want to break off the wristbands, but it's also like what's keeping them like potentially in contact with the Ark.
Well, if you're Bellamy, it's a different story. You're 100%
The only argument for the entire, for all of the 100 bar Bellamy, who actually isn't even part of the 100, but the only argument is we cannot survive long term without the people on the Ark. Will said, I don't care what Bellamy's telling you. He says this later. But Will says, our farmers are there, our doctors are there, like our chefs are there, like we need the people, like them or not, we need them. That's it. The 100 could not have survived if the Ark did not come down. Yeah, that's a universal truth.
I agree with you. I was honestly going to ask the same question, Dave, to everyone. Knowing myself, I feel like I would have been on Team Clark and Wells. I understand why the 100 that are on, you know, Murphy and Bellamy's side.
Yeah.
Me personally, if I was part of the 100, I would have been on Clark and Wells' side.
Okay, so this is such a lit scene. It's kind of like bopping around and we get Jasper and Monty and Murphy and Wells and Bellamy and Octavia and Clark all in the same scene and my senses were overloaded. I can't believe the fortune that we are in with these characters all in one place. It's fucking incredible and it's already Lord of the Flies happening. Like immediately Lord of the Flies. Murphy versus Wells. Wells is like limping and Murphy's about to beat him up and that's where Finn, Spider-Man's in. And he's like, yo, man, like, what? Why don't you wait till it's a fair fight?
Love the hecklers in the crowd because you can hear an audible gasp from some of them, like, oh my God, some dude just jumped down to stop this fight. We got to listen to him.
And
he drops from 10 feet and then collapses down. They thought it was the coolest thing they've ever seen, which it might have been because they grew up in the space. Who knows?
I don't know, man. That's
people don't do cool things. People don't jump down from anywhere in space.
That's a great point. Nobody's ever jumped more than like 10
feet. That's the biggest jump. I'm fine with it.
That's
amazing. I'm letting the corniness go.
Like, hey, spacewalker, rescue me next. The way it's less the line and more the delivery from Marie, who walks in and says, hey, spacewalker. I'm like, ooh.
Stop. Dude, but that's the thing. Like, they can have the corny lines. I just didn't like the jump in with Finn. And
I loved it. Bring it.
I will say, though, that this is probably where I personally made the internal decision to start rooting for Wells. Dude, Murphy was coming off so strong. I was like, someone put this fucking kid down, please, for the love of God.
Murphy's a villain.
He's a villain. And we talked about it. Hate him. In the May We Meet Again episode, he is a phenomenal first season villain.
And really, Dave, let me tell you this, because you might appreciate this. Murphy's character was not supposed to go on. Yeah. Like, he was going to be this one and done early villain. But then Jason was so blown away by this dude,
Richard Harmon,
that they just wanted him around. He became the favorite of Benchtown TV.
It could have gone either way, and I think I would have been fine with it because, I mean, with a character as dickish as Murphy here, that flip into being a good guy, you know, that's character development. That'd be great for the story, but also fuck this guy in the moment. This guy fucking sucks. Let's kill him, please.
And it takes 4 good seasons before you can even say that. He's useful.
Watching season one, when Kathleen was telling me to watch season one, I was talking about how I hated Murphy. And Kathleen, because you said you watched 3 seasons.
I said, it's hot. Sexy.
Exactly, though. But seriously, though, we watched season one. I'm like, this guy, Kathleen loves this guy. What the hell is going on? And we texted you, and I was like, Kathleen, Murphy sucks.
Definitely
like,
a zero.
So hot.
Said, from a looks stop. Perspective, yeah. too, he's a zero. He is not attractive.
But
in the
now
slightest.
You wait, because he's a one forever.
No, two. Two means good, right?
No, one is bang. Marry. Zero is not bang.
He is just
who you would marry.
He grabs the audience by the balls because everyone has forced to like him eventually because he's just so he's relatable because
Dave.
He just is doing what anybody would be doing if you're trying to survive in this goddamn messed up universe. Then every actor we've talked to, we brought up his name. All of them love him in real life. Like Richard Harmon is the man. Murphy is basically the face of our fandom as a Bingetown TV group.
Speaking of being grabbed by the balls, I feel so bad for Wells. He is the perfect definition of the sins of our father. I mean, he has done nothing but follow the rules and try to be a good citizen. And all of a sudden, he gets himself arrested to go help somebody. So, like, very noble. And then he gets down there and everybody hates him. He can't do a single thing without everybody being like, boo, like, your father sucked.
And that, I'm going to completely agree with you. He was definitely, without a doubt, my favorite character. And this scene particularly probably drew me in more to him because I just was so sympathetic for him. Just how are you going to blame this dude for what he's doing?
He's like, the third faction. It's Clark and the people that believe in the bracelets versus Bellamy and Murphy and the people that don't. And then Wells, because Clark does not fuck with Wells.
That's what I was saying. I couldn't decide between if I wanted, you know, whose side I was on. But Wells was the perfect middle ground.
In this episode, I literally think I would be Wells in real life. And I think a couple people in this group would be Clark. And then, I don't know, I feel like Kyle would be the masses vibe. Like Bellamy just saying, fuck you, B-Toms. Yeah, fuck your dad. Eat a dick.
Well, I mean, I definitely would have been the guy going, no one has a sister. So I guess I would have been in the Bellamy.
The one line where they're yelling at Wells and they're saying, your dad floated my... I guess it's Murphy, it might be. And he says... my dad didn't write the rules, and someone jumps in and says, yeah, but he enforced it. Why is he the bad guy for enforcing it? He didn't write the rules. That's the point. That's why, like, if you want to yell at somebody for writing the rules, that's fine. But enforcing rules, that's what you have to do.
If that's your point, then you also were someone who said that Kane is a villain in this episode, right?
I think he's a villain, but I also, like, I'm fine with what he does.
To wrap it back up to why Wells was grabbed by the balls. He's down there on Earth and he can't do anything. Every single suggestion or idea he makes, they're just like, no, fuck you. I hate your dad.
Yeah.
I mean, I would be that person saying fuck you to him.
Yeah. I mean,
it's especially tough for him because Clark should be his ally because they're kind of in the same mindset. But Clark can't be his ally because Clark hates Wells for other reasons. Mm-hmm. So Wells is completely on an island. So to conclude this fight, you know, Finn clears the air between Murphy and Wells, and he's like, you know, he's only got one leg, like, back off, bro. You know, just completely alphas the situation. And then Octavia says, save me next, spaceman. And Bellamy comes in and is just like, whoa, 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 relax. I made sure to be on that dropship so that I could protect you. I don't want you flirting with, like, spacemen, this, that, and the other thing. And Octavia's just like, dude, I was under the floorboards for the first 15 years of my life. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. Bellamy's like, okay, but he's still pouty. We can tell he's still pouty. Bellamy reveals that he did something to get on the dropship that they would kill him for, and nobody knows what it is. It was a bad thing, though.
It could be anything. Since
something that they would kill him for.
It was a good thing, because if he had a better shot, then Allie wouldn't have taken over the world. You feel me?
Really?
Yo, wow, Luke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Next scene we have is Finn going over to Clark, who's kind of tending to Wells's leg, and he's like, yo, Mount Weather trip, when are we leaving? And Clark's immediately just like, we're leaving right now, like, let's go. And Wells says, how are you guys going to carry supplies for 100 people? And Finn turns around, and the first two people he sees, Jasper and Monty, is like, bro, we got two more signing up. Octavia comes in, says, sounds like a party, acting all flirty, cute, like, we're on Earth, no danger, we're just taking a walk.
I love this scene because it's just, I mean, obviously it's meant to be this way, but it's such great fate that Finn turns around and just sees Spatcher and Monty, claps them on the shoulders, like, they're coming with us. And I just love and feel bad for Wells with the fact that he's just laying there with his bum ankle and can't go with them.
Yeah.
So he can't be part of this squad.
I did forget to say, though, when
the storyline sucks.
Sorry, I cut you off for a second. I just wanted to say, I forgot about Monty this episode. He is, him and Wells definitely carry. I love fucking Monty this episode.
Monty's arguably.
Monty's the beast.
Yeah.
Monty's, there's nothing unlikable
Jasper's
about Monty.
Whatever.
At all.
No.
Well, okay. Big question. Exactly. Where did they come from? The snowboarding goggles. Nobody snowboarded 97 years. People didn't even know what snow was.
There's no wind in space. Like, what the fuck are the goggles?
We know elastic can only last for so long before becoming. We all have boxers.
There's no. I love it.
Listen,
so
if you if you don't care about Jasper, then you're not going to care about the first season of the 100, because one of the first big things is when Jasper gets a spear in his chest.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel that, like, one of the most pure characters getting the spear in his chest and going like, then you're not going to watch the rest of the season.
Okay, let's go forward. So we've got this crew.
Before we move on, it's important to note that Clark notices that Finn, there's cuts all over his wristband, and she knows that Finn was trying to take it off. She's like, you can't do that. The Ark, you know, if they think we're dying, they're not going to come down. And Bellamy is very interested in this information about the wristband and that the Ark might not come down if they think they're dying. He's like, Back at the Ark, we have Abby monitoring the kids' vitals through the wristbands, and she notes that Clark's blood sugar is low. She's like, they still haven't eaten. They haven't found a food source. And at that moment, we get Abby taking a phone call, and she says, Jackson, hurry up. We need a lot of A negative blood. And our girl Cece is like, "What? Well, what happened? The chancellor has been shot." And this is where Jimmy was like, how long did it take for this information to get to Abby, the chief medical expert on the Ark? It took an entire dropship going from the Ark down to Earth, and the kids like acclimating themselves for her to get a phone call saying that the chancellor was shot.
Honestly,
that's hours.
You putting it that way kind of makes it. Okay, so picture this. So we know that the head of the prison,
Shumway,
tasked Bellamy with this. We don't know this yet from the pilot, but we know this because we've watched all seven seasons, right? So he tasked him with this. For all they know, he could have shot him in his quarters. And how long does it take for someone to get a dropship down to the Earth and whatever? I honestly think that when you put it that way, it could have been done.
Also, there's no time. But it's not a time one for one. Like, we don't know how much is being shown to one side versus the other. It's not really equated.
We do because
the wristbands going out and in real
okay,
time.
Okay, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. And it is in real time. And I think that this is a plot hole. There's no way around it. That information that the chancellor, the most important person on the Ark, that information should have gotten to the chief medical expert on the ship way faster.
Especially when all this shit is going on. Like, when these people are on fucking Earth, like, he should be there. And people, like, you're not going to just question, right, like,
where is Jaha?
This is an important transition for humanity, and he's not there.
He should be in the command
center. Arguably the most important transition. This is the humanity's almost last moment.
Thank you for that take.
Also, it's weird because Kane was calling the shots in an earlier scene this episode, so assumedly he had already inherited those Chancellor per tempore, I think is the term that they use. Yeah. The chronology just doesn't line up there.
But also, he probably was high enough where he was given orders in certain situations anyway, but I will give that to you 100%.
Yeah.
Smoking on that Jasper, good.
Yeah, I was gonna say, isn't that why Jasper?
Dave, you'll appreciate this. There's an episode way down the line in season four when Jasper's just giving up on life. He's just doing whatever makes him happy, and the whole Ark is crashed on Earth. And he tells Monty to go to the area where he used to live and say, "Yeah, like I stashed some weed in there. While you're over there, grab the stash." It's so good.
Those two. Their friendship really is something
else. Jasper got some brownie points right there. I was just going to comment that in the fact that, like, okay, I said that I didn't like Jasper that much. He was more of just a jag to me. He just was a guy, whereas Monty was a huge personality. Okay. Yeah, he was just another guy, and Monty was like a personality. So
I will debate that because in season two, which is arguably the best season of the 100, Jasper is an MVP.
Jasper's great. But his downfall is so heavy that it almost ruined the entire reputation of his character, in my opinion, because he becomes one of my least favorite of the show.
But this is actually the first scene that I wrote down. I'm just grinning like an idiot ear to ear. Like, when they're talking about it and they start hitting each other, he's like, well, someone apologized 1,000 times, and they just start smacking each other. And I'm just like, let's go, the bros.
They enter this kind of forest, and it's not as bad as later when they wake up in the middle of the night and there's like radioactive flowers, but they will go in this forest with poison sumac. It's beautiful. They're walking around. Finn like jumps, grabs one of the flowers, and like slowly puts Octavia's hair back and puts it in. And this is classic Monty and Jasper being like, yo, that's game.
Yeah.
Like that,
yeah.
That, okay, my friend, is game. And then later, when they're hitting each other, is because one of them asked something about them being I don't even
well,
know.
Well, he asked Finn, like, what'd you get locked up for?
Being bored. And then he's like, that is not game, sir. And they're just like, smack, 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 smack. So Finn is making the moves on Octavia, but not really. He's just a charmer in general. So now we're in a spot where Clark is still being just like so smart. Like, she's so smart. She's leading the thing. Monty and Jasper are potheads. This is where you get the kind of reveal of that. And then the iconic shot of these five characters looking at the deer. I feel like I've seen this in a promo or on Tumblr so many times. It's a classic shot of these really good five characters, and they look at this deer. And Clark had made a comment earlier in the episode being like, I'm concerned because there's no fucking animals around here, meaning they're probably all dead from like radioactive shit.
I really like that twist when they see the deer. It was just like that. It just added another, we say this all the time in The Mandalorian, but like, it just adds another layer to the show of just the possibilities of what could come, you know.
Yeah, so they see this deer. It's like a mystical moment almost, because, of course, again, they've never seen an animal before. They see this deer. It turns its head, and it's like a radioactive two-head deer, but not even like two heads. It's like
split in half.
Split in half deer, and they're just like, like, whoa, baby, that's scary.
That's exactly what they say, actually.
You guys ever see
the script in front of me?
The movie Annihilation came out in 2018.
Sure, Natalie
Portman. Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
No, that is 100% what it reminded me of. Just this, just spliced gene animal that was just a horrible, what's the word, victim of just radiation.
Back on the Ark, our next scene is Abby in the operating room, and she is working on Jaha, and she's talking to Jackson, who is obviously her assistant in the OR, and says, you know, we need more anesthesia. Give him more anesthesia. And Jackson says, I can't do that. We've already used more than enough, like more than we're allowed to. You're asking me to break the law. And Abby says, I'm going to do it myself. And then we continue and we get our guy, Paul's favorite character, Commander Shumway, saying that they've ID'd Jaha's shooter and it's Bellamy Blake. They're like, well, what's his motive? The motive, obviously, is his sister. You know, everybody knows about Octavia Blake, how she was the girl under the floorboards. He said, clear motive. And Shumway then proceeds to kind of steer the conversation towards this population reduction. He says, as Chancellor pro tempore, you have the power to give the executive order to approve this population reduction. And Kane, I feel like this is almost an iconic line where Kane says, if we're going to kill hundreds of innocent people, we're going to do it by the book.
I'm so glad you said that, because that is, I think that's one of the only quotes I wrote down for the whole episode.
I understand that Kane is trying to be logical here. I guess it's just the lack of sympathy that really gets to me, as Kane being like, fuck this guy. But like, honestly, do it by the books. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah,
that.
You got to realize that Kane in his mind is thinking that, especially as being Chancellor pro tempore, it is his job for the entire, like, the human race, the species to survive is on.
So Kyle, let me ask you, do you think that he has no ulterior motive? You think he's actually just going straight by the book? I think it's a weird situation in episode one. Like, Abby tries to make it seem like he has some kind of ulterior motive.
For me, at least for my first time watching, I thought like Kane was trying to do his own.
I think they're purposely trying to make it seem like he has an ulterior motive. But if he doesn't and he actually is just going by the law, then he's not an antagonist.
It's funny that you say that, because my note for the scene is that, man, they do such a great job of portraying Kane as a bad guy.
Right.
Because he's someone that, like Paul was saying earlier with Thanos, like, you kind of get where he's coming from. I mean, you don't really like the way he's.
He says the exact line. He's like, I will break this down to an Adam and an Eve. As long as the human race survives.
That's why I say that I don't think he has an ulterior motive.
Yeah, he's not an antagonist for that. He's just trying to make sure.
The only appeals to Kane in this episode for what he's doing wrong, nobody says what you're doing is illegal. They all come to him like, oh, Abby's my best friend, you can't kill him, this, that, and the other thing. Nobody tries to say logically, you're illegal, you're corrupt, like, this is what you're doing is evil. Like, nobody says that, because it's not
right.
If you had a completely object leader, he would be making the same decisions.
Exactly. If you had a computer,
yes.
If he had a computer, like, ruling over just by the rules, it would be Kane right now.
Here is the thing. the rules on the arc are savage. And that is at the core of the story. You float people for literally anything. And the idea
that was like so wild to me is that like you could do just a tiny little thing and you're just getting floated, which is like, I get that like you want pure human beings, but like, dude,
no,
like,
it's not even about I want pure human beings. It's about we have to get rid of anybody.
The oxygen on the ark.
Guys, it's called the when ark. The ark, Noah and the ark. When it flooded, like he's literally, it's called the ark because that's everybody surviving. And but going back to Cain and making a decision for, I'll bring it back to an Adam and Eve. That is the only reason of the ark. The ark is to make sure that humanity survives.
Right.
And there doesn't matter how many casualties there are, as long as humanity survives. Yeah. And that's what Cain is.
You can't have anybody in the entire human population at all deviating from what's going to push the human race forward. Because if you just have anyone scheming a little bit, you need to kill them because there's no room for error here.
Yeah, to put it in modern terms, everyone needs to be Ferta.
Yes.
Let me just finish Ferta my boys. Thought. Everything on the Ark, the rules are savage, and obviously our world would never live by it, which is why we think it's so crazy. But the idea behind Cain is, should we bend the rules for the Chancellor? Like, why would we bend the rules for him? Is there something special about him? And that is where all the like ambiguity is. And I think that is such a cool place to be. I don't like the black and white. Give me the gray every day. Yeah.
And it's also interesting, like you're saying, just because you know that if the Chancellor dies, he's the next Chancellor. So that's why you're like, well, is he like, okay, what's he doing here?
Okay, put yourself in the shoes of someone who's in charge. Say you do bend the rules to save Jaha's life. Then what? Joe Sixpack has to go to the OR. They run out of anesthesia. And, you know, you have an uprising on your hand from the working class. You know, it's just like,
this man has a six pack. He obviously is a hard worker. We need him.
That's alive. True. Hey,
Rick
man.
And Morty refer to that as a cum gutter. But what I was not to bring it back to something everybody loves, but the Bible and religion, is that Cain and the Ark, like Cain and Abel,
I'm
Ark,
sure
Noah and the Ark.
That was in their head when they named him.
Yes, there's symbolism there, and especially because he brings up the cosmic Adam and Eve. Yes, I think that's intentional symbolism. I'm going to progress through this story here. We have back on the ground, Murphy and one of his cronies start harassing Wells, and Wells is just leaning up against the drop shift, and apparently they had carved into it first son, first to die. So they're just trying to intimidate him, freak him out. And Murphy tells Wells, like, oh, we get a little bit of Murphy backstory. You know, my father begged for mercy to your father and he didn't give it to him. Why should I give you the same thing? This, that, and the other thing. Wells and Murphy have beef. It's established. It's our pilot. We're trying to set that all up. So Wells walks away, enter Bellamy. Well, it's not worth Wells's time. He's just like, all right, whatever, guys. You spelled the word die wrong. Like, I'm not telling you anything. He walks away. Bellamy comes in, and Bellamy starts to get, like, consolidate his own power. He starts to get Murphy and his cronies on the same team, says, once the Ark comes down, they're not just going to forgive your crimes, all of our crimes. Like, we're going to go right back into a cell where we started from. The only way out of this is to take off our wristbands so they think we died and they won't follow us down.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, best case scenario, we're going to be picking up their trash.
I love it. I think it's a solid argument, although we know Bellamy has a more personal stake. I think it's a very valid argument. I'm down. Obviously, first watch, I'm like, Bellamy, could you stop it? Would you fucking stop? But now I'm like, that's not bad because fuck the adults.
I'm in that first watch, obviously, phase. I'm just like, stop, please.
So Bellamy is wrangling up the 100 to take the wristbands off. It's bad, which we know, but it's in the middle ground while we're watching this pilot, right? So I believe the next scene is Clark telling the squad what's up about the oxygen, right? So she's informing them that, listen, bitches, if they can't get down, they're going to die up there. There's not enough oxygen. They have about 3 months left, which is a really hot piece of information and will eventually be a very, what I believe is a really good part of season one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see in this episode specifically, Kane's immediately going to start killing people off to gain more oxygen, which is really intense. Now, we've got the core five. We've got Clark. We've got Octavia and Jasper and Monty and Finn, right? And we've got O making a damn move. She's stripping down into the water, and Jasper says, "Damn, I love her." And they've never been swimming, which is fun. It's just like a fun little fact. And O looks hot. Can I get a agree on
agree.
Three?
Agree.
One, two, three.
Agree.
Hottest chick.
Yeah. Real quick, I just want to say that every character is so good looking in this. Male, female,
sexy.
Everything.
Sexy group.
They're all sexy.
They picked some good people to go to the go to.
Sex sells, baby.
In this episode either, right? No Harper at all? No Harper at all.
No,
right?
No Harper's not for a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you think this is did they take baths on the Ark? Probably not.
No, they stink, which is why everyone was mad at me when I said Murphy smells good.
Yeah, but he's been in the mind space. He's got to smell good.
Well,
I'm talking about being submerged in water.
No one's brushed their teeth in 8 years. No. I'll tell you that right now.
No, you brush your teeth, but you don't. You probably, it's like air.
Exactly.
It's pressurized air to clean yourself.
Are you thinking of an automatic hand dryer, except just times 10?
The worst thing ever, but your whole body.
Whatever. Whole point I was getting at, what you guys were saying, nobody's been swimming. They're like diving in underwater. This is like a crazy sensation they've probably never felt before.
We get this shot of them being like, oh, Davia goes behind them. It's like a snake coming at her. This is probably the worst shot scene in the whole show.
Yes,
without a doubt.
It's like her flopping around. It's like, what is
so
he got her by?
Funny.
She only has scratches on her leg. Yeah. So what is the grasp? Whatever it is. They get her out by a distraction, and they're all like, oh, thank God. Not like, oh, shit, could that come on land?
Do you think they missed out for, like, season 1, 2, and 3 not having
monsters?
I was literally going to – I think I said it. It might have got overlooked earlier.
It doesn't necessarily have to be a monster.
I was literally saying you could get a season's worth of content out of just monsters alone on this planet.
Whatever's alive and lifted the radiation.
Exactly. Right. Like if you want to bring on the double faced deer, you want to bring on the snake, like make it some kind of plot point.
That's why it surprised me so much to hear you guys say that they just don't do anything else with it, because like it was a big thing this episode. Like,
yeah, but the relationships between people and the limits that they're willing to go to for the people that they love. And you could definitely integrate that into fighting nature itself, but they really focus on the fact of, you know,
the grounders that survive.
So
much better.
Human versus human conflict.
Fuck a creature.
Which I agree with Kathleen is much
better. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I don't want to be a douche, but I think it was more of an eel than a snake.
They say snake, so
thank you for
fuck
that.
Off.
We agree.
They literally say the words.
It's because they've never seen animals, Luke.
And also, what I just want to say is that when I rewatched the pilot today, I completely forgot that this scene even happened. I forget her stripping down and jumping in the water, but I completely forgot about the fact that the eel comes and Jasper kind of saves her. And then
I like
Monty
how we're
goes,
calling an eel now. Fuck the snake.
Save the girl.
Yeah, my boy.
Yeah, that was sweet. But
biggest regret is Jasper and Octavia not getting at least one arc together.
One bang scene. One.
Can you imagine?
Scene.
That would have been a huge
for all humanity
plot point for season
for
one
mankind,
of like the hot girl. Getting with the, I guess, nerd, if you want to say it.
One small ejaculation for man. One giant ejaculation for mankind.
It's Lincoln comes too early in the show for that to be a thing.
So the next scene we've got is everyone's having a wristband burning party. They go to a bonfire back at the dropship, and one by one, people are standing over this bonfire, getting their wristband off, and everyone's cheering. And Wells is like, what in God's name? What the fuck are you guys doing? And of course, this all just goes to Bellamy's agenda. Wells is telling them, listen, stop. But we kind of flash to the arc of them going one by one. Yes. And we kind of skipped a scene before. First of all, when the two died right away. I really thought this
the
was
Johns.
Interesting. Yeah, it's what did you say?
The Johns, John Murphy and
John
M. Begay.
Yeah,
right?
Well, No, well, they didn't die, but the two that die right away. So they kind of say, okay, it's impact. They look at the screens and see it's red, and they're like, they're just excited to be down on Earth. Like, it's such an interesting thing that they really only did it by vital signs because they have no idea what they're feeling, and it's so cool. So then one by one, everyone starts dropping off, and they're trying to decide if it's radiation. And this plays such a bigger part in what the Ark is going to do moving forward. It's like, okay, is it radiation? Are they taking the wristbands off? Are they getting killed? Are they killing each other one by one? I think it's a very interesting concept that I'm glad they almost didn't make better versions of the wristband because it was all up in the air.
It's also, I mean, it has everything to do with the fact of the decision that the people in the Ark are going to make. But also the smaller thing is it's the beginning. Not even the beginning. It is the tension between Abby and Cain.
Yes.
100%.
Because Abby 100%. Has the explanation that she understands what's going on. And Cain is so convinced that it's radiation. Like, if it was radiation, they wouldn't die. Like,
yes.
Like, all these, they have these conversations and these arguments over and over about these things happening.
What you're saying is very interesting because the whole thing is literally Abby's trying to say that it's not radiation. And if you're one side of the story, you're saying, oh, she's hoping that it's her daughter's okay. And the other side of the story is Cain saying, no, 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 no. And you're thinking, oh, is that him trying to just get his agenda on top? It's one or the other. Yeah. And you're just trying to decide who's the actual antagonist in the situation.
I think, honestly, my least favorite quote of the entire episode, and we talked about it, there's a lot of corny shit. I think it's when Abby turns away from the argument, and I believe it's this scene where she says, like, I hope I'm right, or please let me be right.
Yep. Because
for her, she should know.
She should know. Yes.
Like, she's reading all the vital signs, all of the, this is an example I'm going to throw out, but I don't know if they use it, like the potassium levels, the blood sugar. Like, she should understand what's happened. I just don't like when she turns and says, I hope I'm right. She is right.
That's literally like only for the audience. Only for the audience.
Okay. But at the same time, you have no clue what's going on down on that planet Earth. Like, yes. The vitals would tell you, would suggest one thing, but oh my gosh, this is a planet you haven't been on for 100 years because it's been ruined because of radiation. Yes, she would, in the back of her mind, all of her medical expertise would tell her, Clark is probably fine. This is what I think from a medical standpoint, but in the back of your mind, you would always be thinking, oh my God, I hope I'm right. I hope these kids are still okay.
I agree with you. I'm just saying, the way they present it in terms of Cain's argument of being it's radiation versus her argument of they're excited to be there and they found food and they found water, all those kind of things. Like, it's a little upsetting that she doesn't trust herself more, but I agree with you. And especially add the layer of when she says, you know, I hope I'm right. She looks right at Clark's vital sign and sells that point. But I agree with
you. It's necessary just for the audience. She's questioning it in her head, but we don't know what her head is saying, obviously, if she's just thinking it. So she has to say it out loud just so we know.
So they have the whole bonfire with the with the wristbands. They're all cutting them off, throwing him into the fire. And the chant that they come up with is whatever the hell we want. And the note I wrote is just that it's the worst chant ever.
Iconic and stupid.
It's still no iconic, rhythm, though.
It's actually iconic, though. Really is.
There's no rhythm.
Whatever the hell we want. Okay. Whatever the hell he says.
I love when he says it. He's just like, whatever the hell we want. Anytime he says anything, whatever the hell we want.
Hard disagree with Kyle here. I think it's a great chant.
Fuck you, Paul. Anyway, so.
Okay, whatever.
The sound of them chanting it isn't great, but I agree with Jimmy. And the way that Bellamy uses it to Wells, it starts to rain. And Wells says, line. We need to collect this. And Bellamy looks at him and plainly just says, whatever the hell we want.
Dude, that is awesome.
That's such a good line because he's literally like, we need to collect this stuff. Whatever the hell we want. It's like so nonchalant.
Yeah. It just goes to show Bellamy's entire thing where he's not looking out for the whole of the group. He's truly just looking out for number one. That's what it is. He's looking up.
I don't want to speak for everybody in Bingetown TV, but I think we are all opposed to groupthink.
We are.
Fuck groupthink. And this is groupthink on a 100-person level. You know, Bellamy's thinking something. He gets the crowd on his side, and then everybody is opposed to Wells. Poor Wells. This is the first time I was getting real Lord of the Flies vibe.
Yeah, totally.
So back on the arc, we get 10 more kids have seemingly died, which they've been burning their wristbands. So that makes sense. They just think kids are dropping like flies. And Abby notes that Dr. Jackson notes that the plasma osmolarity is going up, which means that they found water. So Jackson and Abby are kind of like low-key celebrating. But then Kane comes in to rain on their parade. And he's arresting Abby for exceeding the maximum amount of medical supplies allowed for a single patient, which obviously would be a rule on the Ark. Abby comes back and immediately just says, breaking the law to keep you from becoming chancellor was the easiest decision I ever made. There is so much tension between that two.
Yes, exactly. The first thing I wrote down after watching this scene was, I cannot believe her and Kane end up in love together.
I did not know that. And wow, that's crazy. Bro. Because this one episode alone, just the tension, like they literally are at each other's throats the entire time. The pathway is
unbelievable.
That's cool, though. So, no, that's cool. That's a cool outcome.
But the best thing about it is it makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Dave, because they're the oldest people in the show.
Service level analysis.
I'm just saying. But they had a line earlier that Jaha said to Kane, sometimes being a leader means knowing when to follow the law and when to break it. And this was a perfect example. This was an opportunity where they needed to break the law to save somebody's life. But Kane, being the, you know, rule book, follow the fucking guidelines dick that he is, he's blinded by following the rules.
That's exactly why me and Kyle were just going back and forth earlier. Like, is he going by the rules or is he going by his own agenda?
Well, we don't know.
That's like up to your own interpretation.
We as the audience already knows that Kane is up to his own agenda because Shumway has already introduced this population reduction narrative. So we know that Kane has his own agenda, but Kane tells Abby that, Abby, you're leaving me no choice but to find you guilty. And Abby comes back with a really good line. She says, we always have a choice. You had a choice to persecute my husband. You had a choice to include my daughter Clark in these charges. You know, hiding behind the law absolves you of absolutely nothing. Like, you're not doing the right thing in this situation.
Can I put 2 cents in real quick?
Yeah, of course.
So I understand that Kane, you know, is doing everything by the books, but he's willing to, you know, sacrifice the commander or whatever his position is in order to follow these rules. But if you are aware that one person is able to do a lot more for humanity than some Joe Sixpack, why not break the laws for that one
person?
That's
the thing. Abby gets a lot of treatment throughout the series because she's a doctor. And it makes sense because that's the most valuable abilities you could have.
I mean, that's literally the argument.
If you're the only doctor and Kane's sitting there telling you no, you can't help our only doctor out. You have to follow the rules. Like,
what I was trying to get at is if you bend the rules for Jaha, then literally there are how many is it? Roughly like 1,000, give or take, people living on the Ark? Like, who can you not bend the rules for? You know, like, if some average worker is dying, but you could save him with more anesthesia or more blood, then is
it's an interesting
allowed by the law? Yeah, it is.
Because honestly, he's the chancellor by law, but what makes him better than anybody else out of the 1,000?
If you're on a train, there's 10 people shoveling coal, you know, whatever. One of those people like breaks the law or whatever, and you can get by with those 9. I get it. You can just kill that one dude, whatever, have the other 9 just go to work. But this is like, exactly.
Right.
I kind of want to end this because this is literally just a moral dilemma, you can see both sides.
I just want to make the one comment is that Abby's last quote in this entire scene is that she says, I choose, because they're talking about choices, and she says, you chose to kill my husband. You chose to do this. And he responds with, I choose to whatever, like keep the human race going.
Oh my God, I have the quotes if you
want. Her response is, I choose to make sure that we deserve to stay alive.
Classic Abby through all 7 seasons.
And I think that's although, it's a very interesting quote. It's very interesting that Abby is the person that says that in the pilot because of what she ends up doing throughout all the seasons. And
exactly.
The question is that, does she have that moral high ground? And I think throughout the season, she loses that moral high ground.
Oh, Sister Clark, multiple times that you have to make sure you deserve to fucking be alive.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know about our other vets of this show, but the most like the sticking point of Abby for me is the fact that she becomes addicted to painkillers and throws Raven under the bus because of it.
Yeah, that's her downfall.
And literally, Kyle, I wrote down the same quote as you. Like, I choose to make sure that we deserve to live. And my next sentence is, LOL, the audacity of this bitch.
Exactly.
Because she proceeds to make every single wrong decision. I hate Abby. Paige Turco, love ya.
Kathleen, I don't mean to contradict you, but I think she really does contradict that line majorly after season one throughout the rest of the series.
I just want to make the point that I don't think her addiction is like such a factor in determining her losing the moral high ground. But I think that the fact that she favors certain people over other people and actions that she does, I don't think that her being an addict to painkillers
makes her erode the moral high ground.
But
think about Clark and Lexa knowing that the whatever was going to get bombed, and Abby's reaction to that is what I was thinking of. Abby's like, are you fucking joking? Like, you took your own lives into account before everybody in this camp that you know is about to get bombed. Like, up until
I'm team Abby all the way up to season 3-4.
And honestly, Jimmy, I agree with you. I mean, she pisses us off as viewers time to time, especially because we're always
when she's
Clark,
acting as chancellor,
Clark.
Like, she obviously pisses us off, but I'm still okay with her.
Yes,
like,
I agree.
So the closing quote of this scene is Abby saying, that's the difference between us, Kane. I choose to make sure that we deserve to stay alive. And then we have Abby is obviously getting arrested, and she is placed in the same cell that Clark was being held in. So she sees all the drawings, and we have this scene. It's a moment. It's a thing where she obviously recognizes that this is Clark's old cell. Moving forward, we go back to the Mount Weather crew. And they're all kind of like sleeping, at least Octavia, Jasper, and Monty are. But Clark wakes up in the middle of this forest. It's, you know, it's nighttime out, but she looks around and for the first time sees this forest absolutely illuminated by the glowing fungus, I guess.
I
mean, you would say.
I've seen to death. We don't need to keep
going. No, I
want to
say one more thing, because there are tracks and there was like a toe. So he's saying this is a biped, whatever he says. Someone
he
walking on
monkey.
Two feet.
Bipedal.
And I was like, is this the goddamn gorilla that attacks Lexa and Clark in season
that's
two?
That's actually pretty funny.
Wow. That is vet status. That's
yeah.
Vet status.
And I was like, where is that gorilla to this day? They're in Ton, D.C. So I like to think that the Washington, D.C. Zoo had a gorilla that just outlived all the radiation and just like fucked everything up.
So I'm going to take us to the next scene, which is our girl Callie, Kyle's favorite character, who is never seen again. Callie, aka CC Cartwig, back on the Ark, is going to Kane's quarters and is appealing to his pathos, saying, Abby is my best friend. You can't execute her. Like, you cannot float her. Like, come on. And this is just like a confirmation of Kane doubling down on his orders. Just, she broke the law. It's unbending. Like, it's very clear she has to get floated with accordance of the law.
Yeah, I just think this is a great scene for Kane's character, because the whole kind of conversation we've been having this entire episode, and we brought this scene up, I think, a couple times when we're discussing of whether Kane has an ulterior motive, of whether he wants to be Chancellor himself, or whether he is just kind of acting in the best faith for the human race itself. And me personally, I took this scene as Kane is acting in the best interest of the human race, no matter what can happen. Because we talked about this earlier as well, and I really think Kane and Callie are a thing in this moment. I understood the sexual tension. Maybe it wasn't a thing.
I always see it.
Yeah, I'm looking right at you, Kathleen. Yeah, so if you're saying yes, so I'm in. Okay, they had sexual tension. So she was pleading with him to understand that Abby is A, her friend, and B, the doc. He needs to understand that she is not just Joe Sixpack,
right?
Like we've been saying.
Right. She is more important.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I love this scene for Kane's character because I think it just keeps building on the fact that he is so hell-bent on just understanding the fact that he should be the one to make the decisions to advance the human race no matter what can happen. And he makes bad decisions and good decisions throughout the series, but this is such a great introduction to him.
The music also, like the ominous music that plays whenever he's like speaking to, also plays into the fact that makes me as a beginner think that he's a bad person.
Jarring crescendo.
And yeah, also, B-Toms, I think it was great that he used the word pathos, because Kane in this scene has no pathos. He has negative fathers.
Honestly, to, you know, fight for Kane's corner, a leader shouldn't have that much pathos. You know what I mean? Like, I told Jimmy before, Kane is making the right decisions if a computer was in charge. You know what I mean?
True. And then, but that's, so an that's the opposite take that Jaha gives him, is saying that a true leader of the people knows when to not follow the law.
And that's,
and that's what I think they need to survive.
Abby is the only one that I inherently disagree with. Like, she should not be floated because she's very valuable. She's a doctor. Like, she should have longer of a leash. But everybody else, yeah, Jaha, I don't know how to describe it. Yeah.
No, I'm with you. That's exactly how I would view it.
In this situation, as Kane, I lean to your point about saying that a leader shouldn't have pathos, but I don't think that a leader should eliminate pathos.
Sure.
Which we will find out later in a, I think it's scene or two when Jaha comes in and makes decisions. I think Jaha's moment as the leader, when he is first actually introduced as not just the pre-recorded message, when he actually has a moment of personality and he has pathos,
when he says exactly what I just said, when he says
is a really good moment. Yeah.
And I will try to get us to that scene. Yeah, but first, we have a scene back on the ground where Wells is awoken by Bellamy, who just kind of cups his mouth and is wielding a pistol, says, "Don't say anything. Don't wake anybody up. You're coming with me." And Bellamy kind of leads him to this, I don't know, call it a valley or whatever. And he tries to appeal to Wells, saying, you know, dude, listen, your father banished you. You should be on our side. We're not
he
the
says,
bad guys
here.
Here.
I got you. He says, I don't want to shoot you, Wells. Hell, I even like you. Why aren't you helping me do this? Because Bellamy's coming from this point of view where he understands that the humans up in the arc coming down is not going to be beneficial for him. So to me personally, this is both a likable and a dislikable part for Bellamy, because it shows that his character is a little more consistent. Like, he stays by this, what he says. And I don't know. I really like this scene for Bellamy. Wells, being Wells, says, fuck off. We're keeping these things on. And then Bellamy calls on the boys, being Murphy, Adam,
just cronies,
whatever the
John,
fuck.
Other John.
Other John and Big A.
Bellamy has a gun, and that is something that nobody knew yet. That gun is very important, because everyone is just there with their whatever the clothes they were wearing, clothes off their backs, and Bellamy has a fucking gun.
That's so true.
And I believed Bellamy when he said what he said to Wells, when he's like, I like you, just like, let's do this together, let's help each other out. The 100 on the ground are the 100.
I really like this conversation, because Wells even comes back. He sees through Bellamy, says, yo, enough of this whatever the hell we want stuff. Why are you actually doing what you're doing? And all Bellamy says is, I have my reasons. But he's having a rational conversation. He's not the type of person that just points a gun to someone's head and says, yo, you can either agree with me or you're going to die right now.
Which is,
that's not
Murphy
Bellamy.
Doing, right?
Yeah,
like, he's
100%.
Being a little bit rational. And I like it. I love it.
He's being totally rational. Yeah. If Wells knew Bellamy's background, he would probably be appreciative that he even gave him the opportunity to live at all, you know? I don't know. This is kind of cementing Bellamy as a great character for me, and someone who's not, I don't know what I'm trying to say. Bellamy's awesome.
Yeah, this was a moment where at first I was like, wow, why is Wells freaking out so hard about the fact that they're going to rip this wristband off of his arm? You know what I mean? Because he's like screaming, like, no, like, don't do this. Like, how could you do this to me? But then I'm realizing, going back to what Clark says earlier in the episode, like, don't you care about the fact that, like, the people that you love know that you're safe and that you're okay? And then I, like, it really clicked for me the second time I watched the pilot of that. He's so worried about the fact that Jaha finding out that he's dead. And I was like, wow, okay, now I get it.
I'm enjoying hearing your guys' thoughts about this too, because at least when I was watching, without talking to anybody watching this episode, I personally felt like I was taking Wells' side. And from my perspective, Bellamy was definitely a dick, waving his gun in Wells' face. And he literally called on, like, okay, he didn't use the gun, but he used six other dudes to basically jump Wells. Like,
yeah,
what a fucking dick. So I personally, at this point in time, am not seeing eye to eye with Bellamy. But I like really, your insights.
You're not supposed to, though. Yeah, that's the point.
At my point
we're
in time,
only leveling with him because we know the future and we're trying to understand where he's coming from in the beginning.
Yeah, I get that.
But I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
Watching the scene again, like, we know that Bellamy's not about to kill Wells, but during the conversation, he says, I need them
I did
to
not
think
know
that you're dead.
Going, I did not I thought, know that.
Going, I thought I it was
that he was going to just get, like, this is one guy that's standing between him and perfection, basically, in his mind. He's going to kill him.
And that's what I'm trying to say, only because it's my third watch through. I know that. But like my first watch through, I thought Bellamy was intending to kill Wells, but he's not. They just want to take off his wristband. And that is actually a very good indicator of who Bellamy is as a person, because he easily could have accomplished the same goal by actually killing Wells and taken out probably much more of his longstanding problems like with Wells. But no, he's not that kind of guy. He just wants to take off the wristband. He probably recognizes Wells as an intelligent person, someone who could possibly help lead the 100. I believe Bellamy when he says, I don't want to kill you, Wells. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
They do accomplish it and rip the wristband off of Wells.
Yes. Back on the Ark, it is time for Abby's execution, and we have our girl Cece giving her a hug as she's being pushed towards the airlock by guards. And it's really just a drawn-out scene where it's Abby in this airlock. We have that. We talked about it earlier, but what she says to Jackson, you know, the wristbands can be counter-engineered or reverse-engineered to be comm systems. And we know where we're going. Jaha comes in at the last second, still wounded. You know, his torso is bleeding and pardons Abby last second, right before the button's about to be pressed.
And that's when he gives him the line saying, you know, a real leader knows when to not follow the law.
I brought this up earlier, but I'm just going to say it again because I think it really needs to be said. Jaha's first in-person flesh moment of the pilot of the entire series is so good. Mm-hmm. He walks around the corner and stops the execution from happening and everything, and you really feel that he is the chancellor.
He is
how misleading, because he sucks.
It's so misleading.
So Kyle, storyline. At what pissed, Kyle? At what point are you done with Jaha?
Yeah, I'm interested to know this
honestly,
too, because I feel like
he's a pretty good character until he goes to Earth.
No, I'm done with him so fast. Like,
it's until he takes the alley chip for me.
I was going to say, I think even when he lands on Earth, he's not that for me.
He also puts Murphy on the right path.
Well, no,
Murphy would not be Murphy if not for Jaha.
Jaha and Murphy is the most boring story.
Yeah, they throw down.
I was just going to say, quick hypothetical. Imagine if Jaha didn't wake up from his nap soon enough and Abby died right there. Imagine what would have happened for this year's.
I would say the average score in terms of 1 to 10 ranks of how attractive the women are in each season would drop dramatically if Abby died in season one.
That was it. I'm sorry, Jimmy.
No, I'm just trying to think here. So Jaha, it's so outlandish the way he gets down Earth.
With the fake premonition of the baby.
The fact that
crying.
He takes the rocket. If we're going to forget about all of that, I'm fine with that all the way until he says, I got to Earth and I have a purpose. Then I'm done with Jaha.
You're really that against his character being
I love
the person
Jaha.
Who initiates the Alley Revolution? He no doubt gets a little wild with it and he goes crazy. You know what I mean? He goes towards the cultish, the Second Dawn shit. But I feel like the role that he plays as a character
if you really think about it, he comes down to Earth, and if you're going to make the outlandish way he comes down to Earth acceptable, and then he says, I have a higher purpose, and the higher purpose is Allie, and then she takes over his mind. So you probably shouldn't give him any shit.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I agree with that. And also, it's not a great character attribute that he is co-convinced that he has this higher purpose, but he has been the chancellor on the Ark.
I think validation for him thinking he has a higher purpose is the fact that he survived crash landing on Earth in a missile.
He was the chancellor.
Yeah.
He has served.
I think my only problem is the way that he gets to Earth.
He's had this role.
Weird little fact. It said with subtitles, it didn't say Jaha, it said chancellor in the beginning.
So?
It was just weird. It was like,
Fun fact, back to the episode, though. So Jaha immediately pardons Abby, says, yo, she's fine, looks at Kane, says, I'll deal with you later, but immediately says, how are the 100 doing? He's the chancellor. He knows what's up, and that is what's most important on the docket. Moving on, we go back to our Mount Weather crew who were on their little hike to Mount Weather, and it's Finn. This is our last scene of the episode, but it's Finn preparing to swim across the river that we already know this snake slash eel is in. You know, it's a back and forth. They're all cheering Finn on, like, yeah, you can do it. And then Jasper sees that Octavia is swooning over whoever's going to take this rope across. And Jasper's like, yo, Finn, let me do it. And Jasper's still a little scared. And then we get Finn come in and say, yo, Jasper, it's okay to be afraid, but the trick is not fighting it. Kyle, what's the name of the song? I'm going to stop you right there. It's called When We Come Running. It's a great song. Jasper heroically swings across the river. It's great.
You weren't quick enough, Kyle, dude.
And we come running.
That was
because
so
I said
funny.
The text too. And I literally, it's so funny is that I literally have the tab on. I could have had it, but you didn't even give me the chance.
So Finn and Jasper do have this conversation where Finn's like, don't be afraid, man. And Jasper says something about Apogee, but it's not Apogee. It's Apache, but it's actually Apogee. And then we have Jasper grab onto the vine that's actually a rope. He swings across. It's great. And, you know, this triumphant song, When We Come Running, starts playing. Everybody's so excited that Jasper made it to the other side of the river. And then he gets taken out by a fucking spear.
Right to the goddamn
period.
Text, right?
Period.
Holy yeah. It's an amazing end to the episode. It's like the idea that there's other humans on Earth is something that personally, when I was watching the premiere of the series, I was not.
That hooked me.
Sounds like Lost.
Ready. It hooked me.
Yeah, I had to go right into the next episode when I first watched this.
Exactly. So the pilot is good.
And that's
so, Dave, after the first episode,
the last 3 minutes of the episode has to be good.
Yeah, no, dude.
Episode was corny. Dialogue, there were some really bad points.
Dan,
but
we
this,
not care with Dave.
Yeah,
this
part, you know what? Dave's off Binge Town.
But this part is so good.
Part of what you just said is that you had to go right into the next
episode. Yeah, I said that at the beginning of the podcast. I said that did the job of making you want to watch the next episodes, but I feel like I've seen so many better first episodes.
Yeah, but okay, so in terms of someone who was watching it for the first time, the episode itself got you to watch the next episode, and then add on the layer that people who have seen the entire series, we went back and watched the episode and we were geeking, grinning ear to ear the entire time.
That should mean something. Yeah, that should mean something.
That's a good episode. You know what I mean?
And the sound, the sound, the sound, and we come running.
Are you trying to say it's like a 10 out of 10? I would say like if I were to score it, 7 out of 10.
Dave.
So good.
That's the thing. If you're talking about a TV show that you're going to rate 7 out of 10, and normally people would say, no, dude, that's a CW show. I'll never watch that. Would you tell them to take at least a first couple episode watch of that?
100%.
Would you tell them?
100%.
I'm biased, man. I'm just going
to
say.
You're supposed to say yes.
Like
that's, if you would have said yes, then it would be all good, dude.
Wow, like I said, I could name at least, I feel like I could name way better first episodes that I would rather send people into. I'm trying to bring in a fresh perspective.
But you wanted to watch episode 2, right?
Yeah.
That's all you
should have said yes.
Okay.
Kathleen, when you edit this, just take a yes.
All right, here. Hold on. Cut it. Shut up.
Yeah. Cut it and say this.
Hell yeah. First episode, send me into the next.
It was amazing to revisit. I wanted to kill myself with all 7 of us on this podcast. But other than that, what a time to be alive.
Can't
Have
relate.
Fun.
I love the episode.
No,
the
I'm
podcast.
Kidding.
I said it in the beginning. I said, apologize for this clusterfuck that's about to happen. And was it a clusterfuck.
No, this... The 100 is an amazing series.
It really
is.
And
I love that it starts from like a underdog. I mean, sci-fi shows, there's a million sci-fi shows. And this one, I think, is one of the more like relatable. It seems like it could happen. And in 97 years, this could fucking happen. I think it's incredible.
After rewatching the pilot, I'm so glad that our season 7 coverage, when moments where Monty was mentioned, everyone would turn to me
right.
and say, yeah. Oh, your boy got mentioned, so let's talk about it. You should talk about it. Yeah. I fucking love
That's a pride.
Monty. Yeah,
I'm very prideful that 5 of us are down with the fact that this show is a CW show.
Yeah.
And we
recommend
love
it to anybody.
Yeah, and we actually love it.
We put our reputations on the
line. It will forever have such a special place in my heart. And I get we say this every time. The cheesiness is a turnoff to some people, sure. But if you can look past that and start diving into the actual character relationships, the character growth, which is a huge thing for me personally, I just think, how many other cable TV network shows do it as well as The Hunter? And the answer is not many.
It doesn't matter what network it's on, how much the budget is. This show delivers. Like, mm-hmm. if you are interested in relationships between people, check. Action moments, check. Interesting sci-fi elements, check.
Drama,
check.
Hot sexual girls, attention. Dude. Hot boys.
Oh my god, check.
It's a unique plot too. It's great. Just something that we've never seen before in a TV show.
No, it's a really smart show. I couldn't be more proud. And honestly, I didn't have more fun than recording season 7. This was just the funnest and passionate, these five, and now Dave and Paul, and you can tell they are very passionate. They spoke up so much. We're very passionate about the show. It brings us much joy.
Okay, so episodes for The 100 season 7 would premiere on Wednesdays, maybe like 8 or 9 o'clock. I would never watch them on time, and I would usually have work on Thursdays, say around 8 o'clock. I would get my ass up at 6 o'clock and watch the episodes, take notes diligently, rewatch a couple scenes that I really liked, and then we'd pod that night. Like, I was fucking into it. 7 seasons into the CW show. Mm-hmm. Like, if I ever met a random person out and I just corner of my ear heard them talking shit on The 100, I would get into a physical altercation.
And that's
a physical altercation. You guys probably know me. You guys know me very well because we're best friends and we pod about TV shows that we like. I'm not a physical or violent person. If I heard you talking some shit,
big guns
about
though.
The 100,
throwing hands,
I'd get in your face about it. I would ask some questions like, "How far'd you get? Who's your favorite character?"
Far you get is the question, and I can end us here before we get to the call out. B times, I know you're going to end us strong, but so we'll be covering some of our favorite episodes of the series. We're going to come back because we love talking the 100. We'll talk it until our faces go blue. We're gonna hit some of the peaks of the mid seasons. We're gonna hit some of the finales. We'll be back for all that good stuff. We had a great time talking about this, and we cannot wait and are praying that the prequel gets greenlit, because you know Bingetown TV will be all over that.
Retweet everything that Luke said. We had so much fun covering the final season. This show is very close to our hearts because we acknowledge it for what it is. It's cheesy. It's a CW show. We love it. I almost feel like we have a personal connection with the actors. The show was magical for us, and it was the show that we decided to podcast on first. This is what made Bingetown TV. And if you're listening to this right now, we are so grateful to you being a part of the 100 fandom and following us along for this. And I will close this as always. If you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and may we meet again.
Woo!
We're back. You're listening to the Geekscape Network.